As one of America's largest financial services companies, Nationwide makes simplicity a priority so financial professionals can help their clients achieve their retirement goals. Nationwide Investment Services Corporation, member FINRA, Columbus, Ohio.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and help provide solutions that suit how you do business, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
You know success when you see it, or you think you do, the people in the spotlight. But what about those small business masterminds who succeed at making their money work harder? They do that by having a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, which now earns 5% annual percentage yield. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
Welcome to the Bloomberg Surveillance Podcast. I'm Tom Keene, along with Jonathan Farrell and Lisa Abramowitz. Daily, we bring you insight from the best in economics, finance, investment, and international relations. Find Bloomberg Surveillance on Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud, Bloomberg.com, and of course, on the Bloomberg Terminal. Our Michael McKee now. In conversation with Charles Evans, I had a long, long discussion with him years ago at the Council on Foreign Relations. And this is, you know, all the Fed presidents are hugely qualified, and they're all very, very different. This is a bulletproof, freshwater academic on monetary policy and how it dovetails in to social policy. Let's listen.
Hello, I'm Bloomberg's Michael McKee, live on TV and Bloomberg Radio worldwide with a special guest. Chicago Fed President Charles Evans is joining us now. And Charlie, thanks for coming in. It's nice to see somebody in person for a change.
Morning, Mike. It's good to be here.
A lot of people questioning now whether the Fed is going to be debating monetary policy or whether we're kind of locked in for the rest of the year. The Fed has said, and Jay Powell has said, 50 basis points at the next couple of meetings. Would you anticipate something like that running through December?
Well, we've been discussing the state of the economy and inflationary pressures for quite some time, and the committee has definitely coalesced around moving off the effective lower bound. We've already, begun doing that. And as Chair Powell said, we're going to be moving expeditiously towards something much more like a neutral Fed funds rate. My own assessment of neutral is in the 2.25% to 2.5% range for the federal funds rate. As the chair has said, we just did 50, and 50s are on the table for some period of time. I would expect by the end of this year, it could be quite likely that we were at a neutral setting, and I think we would be very well positioned to address the future inflationary pressures of 2023. I'm expecting things to improve from the very high inflation that we're having, but I do think that it's going to take us some time to take care of this.
Do you see any probability or possibility or reason to that a 75 basis point move would come to the table?
Well, I think it's very useful to front load our policy settings at the moment. We did 50 at our last meeting, and it's extremely likely that 50 at the next meeting and, probably thereafter. It's once we get to a good setting for the funds rate when we can sort of after that do a more measured pace of increases, say 25 basis points at each meeting after that. I think that would be a nice shallow path that would give us time to assess the incoming data and know exactly what we're facing. So if we do a little bit more sooner, then we can get to that point where we can do the shallow path, or maybe we take 50s a little bit longer. But like I say, I think something like neutral by the end of the year, whether or not you get there sooner or earlier is not that critical. It's being well positioned to address the problems that we expect to face in 2023. That's my first concern.
How far above neutral do you think you may have to go to get the results you want?
It's a hard question. It's Nobody reports what the neutral setting of the Fed funds rate is. It moves around over time. It depends on whether or not we've got tailwinds at our back or headwinds that we're facing. And so I think we're going to be feeling our way around that. Like I say, I've got a benchmark of what I think. And so if we go beyond that, if we go 50 basis points beyond that, 75 basis points beyond that, then that restrictive setting of policy should be working to bring inflation down. We don't have to constantly increase the funds rate to be restrictive. We can get to a restrictive setting and sit there for a while. Maybe we sit there longer at a less restrictive setting, and it takes a little bit longer for inflation to come down. But there are many special factors that have led to the very, very high inflation rate that we're facing. And so I'm hopeful that in 2023, we're going to be facing core PCE under 3%.
Wall Street would like to know whether, if the economy slows, you're willing to slow the pace of rate increases to try to keep the economy from falling down, to keep us out of recession, or whether you will continue to be aggressive if inflation remains high. And I suppose that begs the question of whether you see a recession or not. So I'll leave those two questions for you then.
Right. Well, we have a dual mandate. We are trying to set the monetary and financial conditions to support maximum employment and price stability. At the moment, the price stability objective is the one that's most critical because, at 8.3% CPI, that's much too high. I think it's going to be coming down. The labor market is doing extremely well. There's tremendous demand for workers, and I'm hopeful that labor force participation will increase. But basically, we have a vibrant labor market. So the first order of business is getting inflation under control. Now, as we get to a restrictive setting of monetary policy, I do expect that the economy is going to cool a little bit. By cooling, I mean we're still going to be having growth. I think the growth at trend levels, 1.75 to 2, trend is 1.75, but I'm looking for 2.2% as we continue to have a neutral to restrictive setting. And so that's consistent with growth. If we see something that's weaker than that, we'll have to see what that means for inflation. If inflation, the trajectory looks like it's confidently coming down and we're going to hit our 2% objective or be close enough to it, then we'd have a little more latitude. But at the moment, we really need to be focusing on inflation.
What's your forecast for inflation over the next quarters and year? And I ask that in the context of what you're hearing from the CEOs in your district about whether they're still feeling price pressures, whether they still feel they have pricing power.
Right. So when I talk to, businesses, C-suite individuals or, small businesses, they're facing a lot of cost pressures. And to the extent that they've been able to do it, they have passed along many of those cost pressures. I think the days of how long they're going to be able to pass that along are probably numbered. I think consumers are, getting fed up with high prices and they can respond by shifting their expenditures. But businesses are, facing those pressures. They've raised wages. And in many cases where, 6 months, 9 months ago, we heard that there were intense wage pressures. When wages have gone up, that has actually satisfied and improved the labor setting in those manufacturing plants. And so, higher wages, it doesn't necessarily mean they have to keep going up each quarter, each month. And so I feel confident that businesses are going to get on top of their labor costs and pricing behavior will be more in line with, what I think price stability is. I can't reel off what inflation is going to be 3 months from now or 6 months from now, because there are a lot of real factors that could play out in different ways. And that's part of what we're going to be looking for. If we get to a neutral setting by the end of this year, we're going to have, many, many more months of data to see, is the trajectory coming down or do we still have a real problem on our hands and we need to be much more restrictive?
We are talking with Chicago Fed President Charles Evans. Let me follow that up with a question, not from me, the professional economist, markets watcher, but from the average American. When am I going to feel like my paycheck is keeping up with inflation?
Yeah, I mean, it's been very difficult for households, obviously. Gas prices have been extremely high. Food prices are high. I think worldwide factors are an enormous part of that. Energy supplies, the Russian invasion of Ukraine is hitting gas prices, agricultural prices, a lot of wheat is produced in Ukraine, and that has global implications and all of that. We have very strong demand, so it's you know, it makes sense. It's what everybody is dealing with, higher prices, shortages. You can't necessarily get exactly the product that you want, and it's a lot higher. I'm hopeful that as inflation comes down, hopefully some of those prices will revert and they'll come down. Food prices often, you know, can round trip, and energy prices too. But gas prices are high, and that's always, you know, a negative thing for consumer confidence. If we can get that in better shape, but that's not monetary policy, that's sort of supply conditions. And wages have gone up, so I think incomes have gone up, and, you know, the labor market is good. People who want a job can get a job. That's good for household income. If we can get labor force participation up and some child care to adult care issues resolved, keep everybody in schools, that'll be beneficial for the economy.
Have you been surprised by the strength of ongoing consumer spending, that people are still buying a lot of stuff, basically?
It has been strong, hasn't it? And, you know, some of that, I think, is the fiscal support, but it was very helpful for many households that otherwise would be in very difficult situations. I think that, you know, the growth of the economy, many people are doing extremely well, even if it's unequally shared. And so sometimes those retail sales, you know, come from sort of a skewed distribution of, you know, consumers. And so it's nice that the fiscal support packages and the strong labor market, which has helped lower income workers, you know, get jobs at better wages and also at better schedules, probably more full time. I mean, that's been beneficial. And so I think that's contributed to the strength in retail, and I hope that it continues.
When you think about going forward, how much confidence do you have in your ability to bring inflation down, given that you've mentioned COVID and Ukraine and all of the other things that are going on that are supply side problems, and the Fed works on the demand side?
Oh, that's right. That's right. I mean, you know, at one level, I'm extremely confident that we can bring inflation down. Inflation is the, you know, ever increasing prices of all goods. And, you know, that's a monetary phenomenon, and the setting of the federal funds rate, the policy rate, can address that. What I'm not confident about is we can't bring down gas prices. If gas prices are going to be very high because of real factors, low inflation is going to be, well, they're high, but they're not continuing to go up. But those are real factors, and it's another set of public policies that need to deal with that. Food prices are the same way. I'm confident that the setting of monetary policy can keep them from ever increasing. They could stay high on a relative basis compared to other prices for longer than most people would like, but we can get inflation down. You know, it probably would take a more restrictive setting of monetary policy if those special factors continue to be high.
Before we let you go, let me ask you about the balance sheet, because that's the other side of your monetary policy that has to play out. What do you anticipate happening when you start lowering the balance sheet? Should we see a rise in interest rates at the long end because it was designed to push them down at the long end? And if so, by how much?
That's right. So we've increased our balance sheet dramatically, and we've announced that we're going to let maturing assets roll off. We chose among the most aggressive roll-off paths that we could. So I think we're going to get our balance sheet down to a more normal level before very long. That will have a restrictive effect on financial markets that sometimes is measured, I think, for what we're looking at it. Maybe it's the same as if we'd increased the federal funds rate by 50 basis points on top of what we're actually doing. So we do have that restrictive setting. I tend to think that markets are forward looking. They are. And they price this in pretty much when they know what it is. So I think that effect is already working its way through financial markets. And we've seen long rates go up some. We've seen borrowing rates, auto rates, mortgage rates go up. And so I think it's having that effect. That's helped somewhat with the front loading of restrictive monetary policies. And so that's, you know, we're probably better positioned to be bringing inflation down because of that. So, you know, I think that's working pretty much as we were hoping.
Well, we wish you luck. Thank you very much, Charles Evans, for joining us today, the president of the Chicago Federal Reserve Bank.
Nobody ever says make it complicated. That is why Nationwide makes simplicity a priority by providing financial professionals with straightforward, client-ready resources. From clear strategies to help clients meet retirement savings and income needs, to ways to cover rising healthcare costs and more, Nationwide simplifies planning so more time can be spent helping clients. Nationwide is on your side. Nationwide Investment Services Corporation, member FINRA, Columbus, Ohio.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. You need a company with extensive experience in specialized insurance. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and helping provide coverage that suits your needs. The Hartford offers insurance solutions that help mid to large-sized businesses, like yours, effectively manage risk, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. With extensive experience in underwriting, risk engineering services, and claims, The Hartford goes beyond the expected to deliver innovative, customizable solutions and service that your industry, that your business, demands. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
Success is more than the final destination. It's a path you take one step at a time. It's discipline. It's teamwork. And it's the drive and passion inside of us that comes before all recognition. It's what Stifel's been doing for over 130 years. Quietly, yet strategically, Stifel's become one of the fastest growing wealth management and investment banking firms in the country. Our financial advisors go beyond traditional wealth management to provide clients with direct access to one of the industry's largest equity research franchises and a leading middle market investment bank. Because success is the drive it takes to keep climbing, the passion to keep investing, the best of each of us made better by the best in all of us. And that is where success meets success. Start your journey at Stifel.com. That's Stifel.com.
Stifel Nicolaus & Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
Let's get to Anna Han, equity strategist at Wells Fargo Securities. Anna, the margin pressure from Walmart to Target. Your thoughts, please.
Well, it's certainly a big indicator. Like you mentioned earlier, they employ a lot of people. And as people have a tighter labor market, and yet if people are spending less, the question is, can really companies pass along price? But keep in mind also, John, this is sort of what we're looking for, right? We wanted to see demand cool off a bit to balance things, to bring inflation more under control. So, you know, it's sort of the what we were hoping for, but also a little concerning on how much this raises the possibility of recession.
And we're looking at the physics of a rocket launch right now, and they mentioned the maximum dynamic pressure. You did this ballet in your physics of undergraduate. Let's cut to the chase, Anna. Are we at the maximum dynamic pressure of inflation right now?
We do think generally inflation measures have peaked, but I think it's going to be, you know, using Chairman Powell's language here, it's going to be harder to get that soft-ish landing. I think it's going to be harder to bring down that figure.
Right.
People were hoping that when we got this sort of 8% headline number that it could come right back down. But we're seeing that's going to take several more quarters.
But Anna, what's so important here, let's go aeronautical again, if we can. Anna, the acceleration function is a squared function. Guessing time on the x-axis is the hardest thing to do in this racket. What are the determinants you're going to use to guess when inflation rolls over?
I think one is a dynamic between really how does that good spending go versus the service spending. I think also to see what is a dynamic between when you have a tight labor market and companies are able to have to be competitive and raise wages so that consumers actually have more to spend, but how will that offset with actually companies being able to pass along price because consumers have more money to spend? And then a third component I think that we're underappreciating here is right now, household wealth is very heavily tied to the equity markets. I think we saw a historical amount of nearly a quarter of household wealth is tied to equities. So when equities are down like this, it can weigh on consumer sentiment. If we stay down at these levels, you could see sort of that souring sentiment really start bleeding into consumer spending. These are the indicators we're watching, but we're not quite convinced yet that consumer is really decelerating.
Anna, can you elaborate what you said, which is that this particular series of reports is a little concerning with how much it raises the risk of recession. How so?
Well, when you talk about what is the possibility of recession, for us, it's still a tail probability. It is not our base case. And we still put the possibility of a recession by end of 2023 at around 30%. So that's actually quite low compared to where some people are on the street. But the main driver and something that we've all focused on and relied on to pull us out of the recession post-pandemic and continue to drive our economy has been the U.S. consumer. The strength of spending and that willingness to spend, not just on goods, but as COVID was relaxed, as lockdowns relaxed, on experiences and get out there and travel and put that money to work and circulate through the economy. So if that driver starts to cool down, then becomes the concern, are margins really coming under pressure enough that earnings growth will turn negative, that GDP growth could turn negative? Again, not our base case, Lisa, but the tail risk could be getting bigger here.
So there have been a number of strategists that have come on and said they still like consumer discretionary because there has been such a wave of spending and because of the strength in the consumer. Would you back away from that kind of idea based on what we're seeing right now in these numbers?
I wouldn't particularly back away, but perhaps it wouldn't be our number one call here. And just to keep in mind, you know, some part of that, we've been actually pretty negative on the retailing space to begin with, but we're still positive on the sources where you can have leisure spending, where you can have those reopening trades, the travel tied industries. On the other hand, what we've been looking at very carefully, especially with the more tightening of the monetary policy here, has been the growth style. You've seen it beaten down so badly this year, and you've seen we think we're starting to see the bottom for the growth style. So we're starting to warm up to it again.
Anna, when we look at the market adjustment here, it is off central banks. It is off the Fed. I'm focused on the nonlinearity of their Fed decisions they have to make. It's frankly true for ECB as well. Link equity market performance into the massive challenges the Fed has after the July 27 meeting.
You know, you bring up a great point, Tom, is how are equities going to handle it if the Fed continues to tighten and we start to really see that GDP growth slow? For us, we do expect GDP to come down, but we also still think that unemployment rates could come even lower. And in that kind of environment, again, where jobs and wage growth is aggressive and wages are going higher, we still think a possibility that equities can go higher from here. Our price target remains 47.15, and there's a reason for that. We think that there could be a change in the leadership here. Again, if growth has bottomed and we start getting a better handle of inflation, that's going to bode much better for these growth sectors, and they are still a large part of the S&P 500.
Anna Han, thank you. Anna Han of Wells Fargo Securities.
Joseph Feldman is with us. He holds court with Dana Telsey at the Telsey Advisory Group. We can talk about Walmart and Target. But Joe Feldman, I want to talk about what you and I lived April 2nd, 2013, the real codification of Reg FD. Are these corporations afraid to give guidance to animals like you?
Well, I think the corporations are certainly afraid to give interquarter commentary that would, you know, give too much of an insight into how the earnings might show up. And when doing so, they do have to make things broadly public and available at the same time. So that definitely plays into this. And I do think that you've seen corporations act differently. I've seen investor relations professionals get fired over it. So I think people are very careful to not give too much interquarter information.
Joe, I struggle when I see a stock down 22% off the back of earnings on something that should not be a surprise. Costs. They seem to be struggling with something, Joe, that was obvious to everyone. I don't get that. If we got a big execution problem at a single name or more broadly, and when you see two data points, it feels like a broader story. It feels like, Joe, from my perspective and others too looking in, they're struggling to find the right balance. These companies have gone from being understaffed to overstaffed, undersupplied to oversupplied. And Joe, all of a sudden there's all this inventory and they don't know what to do with it. Joe, how do you find the right balance in an economy moving this fast?
Yeah, I think that's really the challenge. And something actually Doug McMillon talked about yesterday was the speed of all of this, that it's really hard to adjust the business that quickly to play some catch up. Obviously, the consumer is moving and changing quite rapidly. And I think you're right. I think that, you know, the retailers, we saw this with Amazon, too, where they kind of were building out to the capacity that they needed at the time.
during the height of the pandemic, and now you're seeing some of the give back. What's really interesting here is if you go back in history, Target's gross margin has been very stable at right around 28%. Obviously, this quarter, it really dropped a lot to 25.5%. And their guidance for the year would imply that it's going to be certainly well below the 28, maybe more like 25, 26. I think that's transitory. And I know the stock's down a lot right now. But if you kind of really look closely at that line item and look at the way they're operating the rest of the business, there's a lot of pressures right now on the supply chain, on fuel costs, on everything that's just hurting the business right now.
I had a brain freeze there, Joe Feldman, because I just got the fuel cost of the Gulfstream to Davos. Wow, Lisa, that has gone up, to say the least. Regulation FD, I put 2013 wrong. That was a little bit ago, 1999 on Reg FD. Lisa?
I think I see that little violin in the corner that's just very,
yes,
very small.
Thank you.
I think that, look, I don't think that that's probably where people's focuses are on the jet stream. However, there is this issue of what comes next. What's the next shoe to drop after we saw Walmart and Target? Joe, what's your sense here of the other players that will also see similar hits that are not yet priced in?
Well, I think that those that have more discretionary businesses are likely to see some pressure. We've been pleasantly surprised, actually, to see like Home Depot and Lowe's have been performing fairly well, in the face of this. And everybody thought, well, home was going to be done, and it's not. At least home improvement is not. But it does feel like we've seen a slower trend in apparel and in other discretionary categories like home furnishings. That is where we see some concerns. So some of the other discounters may be under some pressure today. I think you have to just start worrying about everybody on the gross margin side and see how that profitability could be impacted by that, even with stronger sales like we just saw from Walmart and Target.
Joe, before we let you go, can you just frame this moment, how much of a turning point this is for a lot of the consumer discretionary areas and, frankly, the consumer staple companies like grocery stores and others, especially in light of the surprise in the C-suite that to a lot of us shouldn't have been such a surprise?
Yeah, I think that we were all assuming that the supply chain pressures had been fully factored in at this point, and they're just not. And we are definitely seeing a slowdown or a change in consumer behavior where there's more of a focus on, as you said, consumables, basics, getting to work and just driving, paying those high gas prices right now. And I think that that lends well to the CPG companies that are out there and the grocers and other value-oriented retail where people are going to be looking to save money right now.
Joe, thank you, buddy. As always, great perspective. Joe Foundman there of Towsy Advisory Group.
Nobody ever says make it complicated. That is why Nationwide makes simplicity a priority by providing financial professionals with straightforward, client-ready resources. From clear strategies to help clients meet retirement savings and income needs, to ways to cover rising healthcare costs and more, Nationwide simplifies planning so more time can be spent helping clients. Nationwide is on your side. Nationwide Investment Services Corporation, member FINRA, Columbus, Ohio.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. You need a company with extensive experience in specialized insurance. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and helping provide coverage that suits your needs. The Hartford offers insurance solutions that help mid to large-sized businesses, like yours, effectively manage risk, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. With extensive experience in underwriting, risk engineering services, and claims, The Hartford goes beyond the expected to deliver innovative, customizable solutions and service that your industry, that your business, demands. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
Hi, I'm Ron Kraszewski, Chairman and CEO of Stifel. Financial advisors, if you're not growing your practice, you're losing market share. Stifel is a growing entrepreneurial, advisor-centric firm built for successful advisors like you. Imagine having the resources of the largest wirehouses and the support of the boutique shops, but none of the bureaucracy to get in the way of you serving your clients. At Stifel, it's your business, your book, your clients. I always tell the advisors we're recruiting, I want you to come to Stifel and double or triple your business. Most of them laugh and shake their heads, but I'm serious. Don't take it from me. Take it from Stifel's number one finish in J.D. Power's 2023 U.S. Financial Advisor Satisfaction Study. So, there's a reason why 148 financial advisors joined Stifel last year. Come join us and find out why Stifel is the firm where success meets success. Visit www.choosestifel.com.
Stifel Nicolaus & Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
Kit Jukes thinks we need to talk more about Europe, so let's get to Kit Jukes now, the chief FX strategist at SocGen. Kit, your words. ECB rates have been negative for almost 8 years. If the economy can sustain positive rates within the next year, the euro will be a lot stronger when it happens. If. Kit, let's talk about the if. How big is that if?
Huge, enormous. I mean, okay, so the first piece is obviously the short-term elephants in the room downside risk, which is what if the gas gets turned off and natural gas gets really, really expensive? That's bad for everybody, but it's spectacularly bad for Europe. So I don't see how we avoid a recession if that happens. Even the EU Commission admits, or pretty much admits, that we'll get a recession if that happens. So that's the first piece. The second piece, you know, they've been going one way, really, lower and lower rates for long enough that you know, the first turn upwards will have a significant market reaction. And already, you know, we have clients asking, you know, where is the real sensitive point on the spread between peripheral and German bond yields in Europe? You know, all of these things. So, I mean, I would put the if in sort of, you know, 3 foot high capital letters. It's even less likely than Arsenal making the Champions League.
Kit, the hallmark of your work is in a few paragraphs, you squeeze in a lot on a lot of different countries, cultures, and economies. Right now, there is a massing, excuse my French folks, pissing match in the United Kingdom over the governor of the Bank of England, Mervyn King, the ex-governor, going after him. Ambrose Evans-Pritchard and The Telegraph and others coming to the defense of economists who put their pants on one leg at a time. What's the Kit Jukes scorecard on how central bankers worldwide are doing?
They're doing their best. Look, I mean, the only analogy I can have for central bankers at the moment is we're saying, can Tom Hanks land his plane on the Hudson? But his plane this time, it didn't have a bird strike. It was hit with a bird strike, then it was hit with an electrical storm, then it was hit with lightning, and then President Putin fired a missile at it. Which Tom Hanks can do that for all the movies we've ever seen? So I give them a break. They had no chance. They did their best by flooding the system with money back at the start of the pandemic. And since then, they're literally, it's why in the end we'll get a recession because this is too hard. Well, and critics can criticize for all that.
Kit, when you say we're going to get a recession, you're talking about Europe. I know that you and your colleagues don't believe that the U.S. necessarily is headed for recession. Do you think that those dualities are basically priced into the euro U.S. dollar already? Or do you think this has more to go and you could get to parity and beyond?
I think the trouble with the euro, to me, is back to that issue with a stoppage to the gas, which brings the recession forwards in terms of time and breaks through. And I can't measure the downside to the euro from that or the probability of it happening. So how can I buy the euro? It's just, that's why I find it unbuyable at this point in time. And I would go on trading it. But yes, there is a big difference in the US and Europe. I'm not sure it's completely priced in. I definitely think it's why treasury yields have got more upside. We have not seen the peak yet. And when that happens, I suspect I'll see lower levels in the euro before we're done. I would say, though, you know, we will get a recession. I mean, models struggle with the recession because it's difficult to work out the accumulated effect of being bombarded by so many once every 5 year shocks in a 2 year period.
Kit, you sound like a hard landing guy. You just said we'll get a recession. That's not really the call, though, is it? It's about magnitude and timing. Where are you on that?
I kind of think next year is really the difficult year, but it could come again. There are things that can make it come forward. So, you know, when you're talking about oil prices are up and then saying that other prices are up more, every other version of oil that I use is up more than crude. So up most is jet fuel. Diesel's up a lot. Heating oil's up a lot. You know, so they're all up by more than crude. So if we get another push higher in crude, it's going to really hurt. If this summer's harvest give us brutal food prices, that's going to really hurt. The housing market in the UK is just threatening to roll over now, and yours could follow. So I would say recessions are pretty likely in 2023 in lots of places. I think it's just plain blind luck if we can avoid them. With the number of pressures coming to the system, but Europe is right in the firing line. That's really the problem.
Okay, awesome to catch up. And just remember, you brought up Arsenal. Tom ignored it, and I didn't mention it. Okay, just
no, remember. We're trying to be. It's
we're still friends. Kit Jukes is such a kid. Thank you, buddy.
We're gonna get right to it here because time is so special with Douglas Cass. He was a Seabreeze Partners as a trader. As Paul mentioned earlier, he has been gifted on caution. He's gotten a little more optimistic recently. Doug, what do you do when Bank of America's Michael Hartnett says cash levels are back to the gloom after September 11th of 2001? What does young Cass do amid the gloom?
Are you referring to the gloom of the Boston Red Sox?
I knew
you're going there.
You know, in like 42 seconds.
Honestly think I wouldn't broach the subject of Major League Baseball.
Dan Ives.
You know, the Boston Red Sox are the new Baltimore Orioles.
Oh,
those are fighting
and
words.
By the way, I'll get to you. I'll field your question in a second. But the Yankees are now on pace with a winning percentage of .750. To be better than the two greatest Yankee teams in history in 1927.
You think these guys are as solid as 27?
Look, for the first time in the history of the franchise, through 35 games, three players, Rizzo, Stanton, and Judge, hit 10 homers or more. This is amazing.
Is Brian Cashman a genius? I thought Brian Cashman was useless.
And now, can you remind me what the question was?
Oh, yeah. The question was, the cash buildup that's out there is on the edge of Red Sox gloom. What do you do when you see everybody saying, go to cash?
Sure. I'll frame my view right now, which is a lot different than the view that I've expressed to you, Paul and John, in the last 12 months. I continue to find myself of the view that the consensus has very abruptly shifted from wearing rose-colored glasses of complacency in late 2021 to now being fearful and embracing many of the long-held fundamental concerns I had of slugflation, geopolitical risks in a flat world, high valuations, persistent supply chain problems, and obviously too elevated economic and profit expectations. So last week I began for the first time to increase our net long exposure on the dip on Wednesday and Thursday as to me, getting back to your question about capitulation, market participants seem to have already capitulated, providing potential positive optionality. We began the year, while most participants were unprepared, we were prepared. I started up Seabreeze at the end of last year. By the way, SeabreezePartnersLP.com is our new website, and our commentary is on that. And I'm happy to say that we're not only up for the month, we're positive for all of 2022, which puts us in good stead against our peers and against the markets. Everyone, me, was offside at the end of last year and is starting to go offside this year. They were bulled up as we entered the year, and now they're bared up after a very large market drawdown. And I think the forced liquidation and defensive posturing part of the marginal investor hedge funds remains a very important and constructive part of my argument.
Yeah, the forced
tradable rally is ahead.
The forced liquidation was a Red Sox pitcher after 1 2/3 innings going back to the dugout. Paul.
Doug, but, I mean,
seriously, Tom, I've observed over time the tops are processes. We saw an important one, I believe, in late 2021 when the market was top heavy with all the fangs, when the rest of the market was foundering, and that bottoms are events. So to me, capitulation was the event. When you force retail and institutional liquidation and hedge funds owing to all these redemption requests, it's very important to recognize that in our financial markets, the strongest known gravitational force is produced by the presence of stop losses and liquidations imposed by leverage. The larger the stop, the greater the pull. So we have this non-virtuous cycle of forced hedge fund selling because of bad performance that led to redemptions,
yep.
And that was a key factor in changing my market view. But there's a whole bunch of other statistics that I could tell you. For example, the 60-40 stock bond strategy.
Oh, I looked at it last week.
The return was, it was the worst return in the history, in a century, minus 12%.
Okay.
Do you know what the second worst performance year to date?
What, quickly?
Through April was in history? 4%. So it was 3x that.
Okay, guys, this is so important. Well, I did this a week ago, Doug. I did it myself. Paul, this is so important. Doug Kass, how do you do equities with the record bond losses we have? I mean, I'm absolutely fascinated by the financial industry's certitude. Bonds never go down. And we're having a bear market. You and I never, I mean, Babe Ruth didn't see a bear market like this.
Right. Well, in terms of bonds, I think today's Target report is pretty important. And let me tie it into fixed income. One of the primary concerns, Paul, we had going into 2022 was that lower demand from higher prices seemed inevitable. And price elasticity of demand is something we learn in economics classes. It measures the responsiveness of the quantity demanded or supplied of a good to a change in its price.
Right.
It's computed by the percentage change in quantity demanded or supplied divided by the percentage change in price.
Oh, boy.
And elasticity can be described as elastic or very responsive or inelastic, not very responsive. So we've been fearful for some time that whether it's a $1,200 smartphone from Apple, a cup of Starbucks coffee, groceries at Walmart and Costco,
or
used Ford F-150, lower demand from higher prices is today's reality. But this is why it's positive, and everyone is going to be selling into it.
All right, so Doug, when I see
the good news, as you said in the prior segment, is the cure for higher inflation is higher inflation.
Right.
And the sort of reaction is ultimately good news from the standpoint of a Fed, which will probably not be as hawkish as
so,
I assumed and many assumed.
Let Paul get in here because
So, Doug, I mean, I'm a big fan of Target. When I see a $100 billion market cap stock, it's a real company, real demand, real customers, you know, real cash flow, real earnings, down 25%. What does that tell you?
It tells me if I had a 4% invested position in Walmart, my portfolio just lost 1% today.
Yep.
I'll be honest with you.
I got
this is an environment, Paul, where the men are separated from the boys. And I may still be a boy. I'm not sure yet, even though we're up on the year. But, you know.
Yeah.
So where do you dip your toes here, Doug? I mean, if you feel like you've seen some type of capitulation, where are you dipping your toes
here? What's the cast to-do list right now?
Well, I would say that the two areas really quickly are the banks, which is by far my largest position. I have a lot of background.
Then what else?
And home builders.
All right.
Okay. Doug, I've got to ask about Amazon very quickly here. Cloud on fire, cardboard boxes, not so much. You've been long Amazon. You say it's even a long-term hold. Doug Kass on Amazon this May.
We markedly reduced our exposure to Amazon at around 3,200. I have a tag end position, which I plan on increasing.
Okay. Doug Kass, can you come on the next time the Yankees win?
I'm not available tomorrow morning.
Thank you, Doug Kass. Thank you so much. This is the Bloomberg Surveillance Podcast. Thanks for listening. Join us live weekdays from 7 to 10 a.m. Eastern on Bloomberg Radio and on Bloomberg Television each day from 6 to 9 a.m. for insight from the best in economics, finance, investment, and international relations. And subscribe to the Surveillance Podcast on Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud, Bloomberg.com, and of course, on the terminal. I'm Tom Keene, and this is Bloomberg.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and help provide solutions that suit how you do business. From liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
Collaborate for a greener future at the Bloomberg Green Festival, a groundbreaking celebration of the thinkers, doers, and innovators leading the way, from design and culture to technology, science, and entertainment. Hear from inspirational speakers and immerse yourself in climate solutions, July 10th through 13th in Seattle. Title sponsor, Amazon. Official airline, Alaska Airlines. Get 20% off using promo code RADIO20 at BloombergLive.com/greenfestival.